Chapter 3. Planning Your Campaign. A quote from General Dwight Eisenhower. No battle was ever won according to plan, but no battle was ever won without one. A successful fundraising campaign at any stage of funding has a rhythm. It has a start, a middle, and an end. It is critical to understand and plan that rhythm along with the associated time commitment before launching the campaign. Entrepreneurs are taught to move fast and break things, but doing so with your fundraising campaign will actually deliver on the stated promise. It will break things. Instead, take your time and plan for the actual activities that will comprise your campaign. One of the most important activities is finding the right investors for your upcoming stage. Engaging investors that aren't good prospects is a waste of time, and time is both the most valuable resource a startup has and one that usually isn't plentiful. Allocating time and priority. Maintaining the proper rhythm throughout your fundraising campaign involves careful allocation of both time and priority. Like any good entrepreneur, you know things won't play out exactly according to the plan, but having a plan helps you figure out when it's time to adapt on the fly. Before you begin, pick a team captain. During the pre-seed and seed stages of funding, it might be obvious who will lead the fundraising efforts for your startup, but that might be because there is only one full-time member of the team. If instead there are multiple co-founders but no one individual carries the CEO title, only one person should bear the burden of being the fundraising lead. Trying to share the duty will be as ineffective as rotating sales reps each week for a $1 million opportunity with a large enterprise, or rotating football quarterbacks with each play. You've got to get into a rhythm, which means context switching isn't helpful. This doesn't mean investors don't want to meet and interact with other members of the team. They will. But the chief fundraiser leads the process and is the frontline person for most interactions. They will develop relationships with prospective investors in the early phase of fundraising, and the best of those relationships will carry forward to closed investments. Once a founder adopts the title of CEO, she will become the chief fundraiser by default. Being the CEO and serving as the chief fundraiser go hand in hand throughout the life of the company. Investors want to evaluate and get to know the CEO more than any other member of the team. That doesn't mean the other founders and executives aren't important to the investors. It just means the CEO is under greater scrutiny than the others and is therefore the one the investors most want to interact with during their evaluation. So if you're an introverted and amiable founder who doesn't like controversy, doesn't have at least some charisma, and has trouble coping with repeated rejection, you will need another founder to be the chief fundraiser. This probably means they should also adopt the CEO title. Start. Determine investor interest. The purpose of the first phase is relationship building, and it should consume about 20% of your time. Over the course of a month or two, you should try to determine which investors could be viable prospects, and you accomplish this by meeting with them before you're actually ready to hit them up for investment. In fact, you should make that clear when you reach out to them by saying something like, "We're not raising money at the moment, but I wanted to see if I could spend some time with you to let you know what we're working on and to get your feedback." With the understanding that you're not going to ask them to write a check at the end of the meeting, investors will give you some of the most honest feedback possible. Their questions, concerns, level of excitement, body language, and hopefully a twinkle in their eye will inform you as to their level of interest. Organize all of this information across lots, possibly dozens of meetings, so that you're ready for the next phase. Even when you're not executing a fundraising campaign, you should always operate in some level of relationship building. You don't need to spend a full 20% of your time meeting prospective investors for a round of funding that is a year or more away, but you should always be seeking and building relationships for just that reason. You're likely going to need to raise money again in the future. The most successful startups I work with are perpetually fundraising, which means that even when they aren't actively executing a campaign, they're building and grooming their investor pipeline for the next round. Middle. Preparation and prioritization. The purpose of this phase is to take your campaign on a test drive while setting the environment for the final phase in which you'll actually hit up investors for money. Over the course of some number of weeks, you should interact with the most interested investors from the first phase to get to the next level of needed feedback. If you're raising a small round and have fewer than 10 interested investors, it might only take a couple of weeks. For a larger round that includes interested institutional investors, it could take a month or more. This phase should consume 30 to 40% of your time. And if you're fundraising out of need instead of want, your level of stress will increase, because by now, you're definitely watching your cash fume date, and the stakes are getting higher. Let's pause for a definition of cash fume date. The date you project to run out of money. There are two ways to calculate the cash fume date. One assumes that you acquire no new customers in the future. The other assumes that you achieve your forecasted sales targets. Many companies calculate both in order to understand the variance in runway allowed. Your interactions with investors will be more specific as a result of exposing them to the amount of money you decide to raise, your key proposed terms, and the milestones you expect to reach with new funds. In some cases, you will communicate ranges so as to not lock yourself in and still allow investor feedback. Examples include the amount you plan to raise and your proposed valuation. You will also set expectations for when you plan to officially launch the fundraising campaign and need to get more specific in gauging the investor's interest. Done correctly, by the end of this phase, you will have a list of investors prioritized by likelihood to invest, a specific amount to raise, and a final set of proposed terms. End. Ask for money. Too many startups begin their campaign by pitching to investors and hitting them up for investment while adjusting and adapting their proposed terms along the way. Not only is this inefficient, but it burns bridges with too many investors. It's not very effective to come back to an investor after a failed pitch to inform them that you changed your mind about the terms and now they're more attractive. It's best to measure twice and cut once for something as important as a fundraising campaign. This phase should consume at least 80% of the chief fundraiser's time. That means your co-founders and other team members have to pick up your workload. Let me be really clear on this. You cannot dial in this phase of fundraising at only 50% of your time. If you execute the prior phases effectively, and if you've got a sound investment opportunity, you should have created momentum that you must capitalize on aggressively. I know that means your business won't advance at the same pace as before, and this is another reason to get aggressive on closing your funding round. Run on the hamster wheel as fast as possible until you either close the round or there's no more interest from high-odds investors. This phase has the most variability in the length of time required. I've seen seed and Series A rounds close in 30 days, and I've seen them take 6 months, and that's after first completing the start and middle phases of your fundraising journey. It takes much longer than you think. Although I mentioned seeing some funding rounds close in 30 days after the preparation phase, those are definitely the exception. If you add up the time allotment for all three phases of funding, you should expect it to take at least 4 months, and probably more like 6. You should also prepare for the possibility of losing momentum at 50 to 75% of your funding goal and needing an additional 2 to 3 months to fully close the round. It almost always takes much longer than founders think to close a round of funding. Identifying prospective investors. Much like a marketing campaign that has an objective of securing new customers, your fundraising campaign could be graphically diagrammed as a funnel. You've got to start by filling the top of the funnel with prospective investors. If you can't find them, you can't build a relationship with them. And just like a marketing campaign, the quality of the prospects makes a big difference to the efficiency and effectiveness of the campaign. Optimizing the mix of quantity and quality of investor prospects is going to take a lot of research and a lot of hustle. Hopefully, this isn't a surprise. Your ideal targets. Most investors are stage-specific. In other words, they only invest in seed-stage companies or only in Series A companies. So let's start by listing the most common types of investors by funding stage. Pre-seed. Friends and family are the most likely source of investment during this phase. However, don't take investments from just anyone willing to support you. In many cases, they must be accredited investors as defined by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. Crowdfunding portals can be a good solution for some startups that haven't launched their product, but you'll need to do your research to compare the options and to make sure your product is a good candidate for pre-sales via crowdfunding. Government grants are also a possibility, and you'll need to do research to find the right programs. Angel investors are a possibility, but you will learn shortly that only a very small subset of angels will participate in a pre-seed round, and they aren't easy to find. Let's pause for a definition of accredited investor. At the time of this writing, for most investments into private companies in which equity is being sold, the U.S. securities laws stress the importance of doing so only with investors that are accredited. There are various financial tests to determine investor qualification, and the spirit of the laws is to protect those who don't have enough net worth to be investing in one of the riskiest asset classes, like startup venture investing. Search the SEC website for the current qualification criteria and consult with your attorney to make sure you don't accidentally jeopardize your company's future by taking investment from the wrong people or using the wrong process. I have to give a warning and strong recommendation here. If you decide to seek friends and family for part or all of your pre-seed funding, please tell them 3 times to their face that, at this very early phase, the odds are high that you won't be able to pay them back. If they still definitely want to support you by investing, go for it. Without the repeated warnings, future family holiday dinners and sorority college reunions can become really uncomfortable if you are not one of the startups that can beat the death odds. Also, make sure to involve your attorney regarding possible accredited investor issues and proper investment instruments to use. Lots of pre-seed funding rounds end up with issues that must get fixed later. Seed. Angel investors are the dominant source of investment for the seed stage. They can invest solo or as part of an angel network or syndicate. Angels that are investing solo usually only do so in their areas of expertise, which usually means startup ventures that somehow overlap with their own professional career. Their online biography or LinkedIn profile can serve as a good source of information for filtering and rating them. Startup accelerators can also be a viable source of a portion of your seed funding because acceptance into the program is often accompanied with an investment. Many accelerators focus on a particular industry or technology, which brings additional value versus just their investment. Finally, there are some venture funds and family offices that invest in seed stage startups, although they are in the minority. Let's pause for a definition of family office. A family office is a wealth management and investing function for ultra-high net worth individuals. Think billionaires or close. They are managed by an investment professional, a staff of professionals, or an outsourced firm. From the perspective of a startup, they operate similarly to a venture fund, but with their funding from a high net worth individual rather than a collection of investors that are called limited partners. Series A. Venture funds are the dominant source for investment for Series A funding. They usually have one or more areas of focus with their investment strategy. This can be along industry lines such as healthcare, education, real estate, technologies like artificial intelligence, virtual reality, robotics, business models such as e-commerce, marketplaces, tech licensing, solution types like mobile apps, SaaS, hardware, customer segments such as consumer, small to medium-sized businesses or SMB, enterprise, government, or just about any aspect of a business plan you can think of. The good news is that venture funds make it easy to decode their investment strategy just by reading their website and looking at their existing portfolio of investments. Regardless of the funding stage you're in, your mission is to find the right investors to meet with rather than just anyone that invests in startups. It's just like targeting customers to buy your solution. You should be laser-focused rather than broad. Do your research with each prospect you identify and prioritize them according to how aligned their investment strategy is with your business. Your most valuable resource is actually time, which is often referred to as runway. That's because with enough time, you can adjust, adapt, and eventually figure out a path to viability. Don't waste your valuable time on low-odds investors. Where do you find them? Venture funds, angel networks, crowdfunding portals, and government grant programs are all searchable online. Your success finding the best targets is mostly a matter of effort. It is the individual angel investors that are much more difficult to find, at least the best ones for a specific startup. That's because they don't have websites and openly published investment criteria. In fact, they aren't always actively investing, so even if you find a perfect match, she might not be investing at the time you need the money. To find the best angels, you have to go where they hang out. Some are members of angel networks or similar angel investing syndicates. And even though they sometimes invest with a group, many of them invest individually as well. Some are affiliated with startup incubators and accelerator programs, probably as a mentor or maybe in a leadership role. Some serve as a judge for pitching events and hackathons. If you get involved with those same groups and activities, you will meet angel investors. If the city you live in doesn't have any of these activities or events, it's going to be a lot more difficult. Angel investors very much like to invest locally so they can keep tabs on their investments while actively helping their portfolio of startups as an advisor of sorts. This means angels from elsewhere in your state or a neighboring state might still be candidates, but your challenge is going to be more difficult. Network, network, network. Did I mention that it's important to network? Networking is critical to fundraising success at all stages other than a pre-seed round that's funded by friends and family who already know you. So if you are introverted, now is the time to either get used to being uncomfortable or find a co-founder who can lead the fundraising efforts. Attending pitching events and hackathons as a spectator, but not mixing and mingling as much as possible, isn't going to help you find your investors. The same thing holds for going to social events hosted by angel networks and only talking to one or two of the participating angels. Networking is also the best way to get access to your ideal venture funds. Introductions from people in their own network bring far greater odds of getting a meeting than an unsolicited email. This means you first have to impress people in their network so that they will be willing to make the introduction. You've got to put yourself out there, even if it's not in your nature. The success of your company depends on it. Pre-seed investors are especially hard to find. Raising money from professional investors before your product is built, launched, and generating revenue is far more difficult than when those things have already been accomplished. This can result in dozens or even hundreds of investor pitches that do not meet with success. The pre-seed stage is often the hardest phase for raising external capital, and this is the reason many startups decide to either continue bootstrapping through the whole phase or find alternate sources of funding, such as a pre-sales campaign or a government grant. The challenges. Early-stage investors understand the high-risk nature associated with their investments, so that's not the big issue. But they are also looking for the right trade-off between risk and reward. Below are some things an investor might seek in order to optimize both risk and reward. Optimizing risk, which means reducing it. They might look for an experienced full-time team with a successful track record or for paying customers of the product. Optimizing reward, which means increasing it. They might look for a huge market size or a valuation lower than normal. The problem is that during the pre-seed stage, the best you could do is approximate the list just described, and that's assuming you can assemble a full-time team that's working only for equity. You could have a huge market and a low valuation, but you won't yet have paying customers from a launched product. If this hypothetical investor sticks to the optimized risk-reward criteria, they will seek startups at the seed stage, not the pre-seed stage. For this reason, you need a special type of angel investor. Introducing the hyper-intersected angel. The term hyper-intersected doesn't exist in the dictionary. It is a term I often use when describing the type of angel investor that has the highest propensity to consider a pre-seed stage investment. It is basically an investor that is able to uniquely lower their risk factor due to having some close affinity or intersection with one or more attributes of your business plan. This changes their own risk-reward equation in a way that allows them to consider a pre-seed investment rather than wait until the attributes of a traditional seed stage investment are met. I'll give you a personal example. I spent most of my professional career selling enterprise hardware and software solutions to Fortune 1000 organizations using either a direct sales or channel distribution method of acquiring customers. I am more comfortable and capable of interrogating pre-seed stage startups that have those attributes in their business plan. As a result, I also feel like I'm better at assessing their possibility of building a viable, scalable, and sustainable business, one that could eventually exit and make everyone a lot of money. I would not feel as comfortable or capable with a pre-seed stage startup that's building a mobile app for consumers because I've never been in that movie before as an operator. Opportunities for intersection. You're looking for angel investors who are knowledgeable about as many aspects of your venture as possible and who can bring their connections along with them. For example, the investor could know you really well. Friends and family are obviously the best example, but possibly so are current or prior close business associates. They already know your style, personality, and what makes you tick, so you don't have to convince them that you're smart, ethical, willing to work hard, and super passionate about the problem you're solving. Pre-seed investors that don't already know you really well will need to intersect or have a close affinity with one or more elements of your business plan. Industry. I'm talking about the industry vertical you will sell into, such as education, healthcare, or financial services. Investors that spend time in your industry understand the subtle nuances of how the industry works, who the major players are, how money is made, and the like. If you also know the industry, you and the investor will speak the same language, and they'll be able to really dive deep with you on your strategy and plan of attack. Better yet, they'll know that if they decide to invest, they can help introduce you to their network and generally help you in various other ways as an informal advisor. Target customer. If you're building a horizontal solution, which means one not uniquely focused on specific industries, seek angels that know the type of customer you will target: corporations, government institutions, SMB, or consumers. Your strategies for customer acquisition and support become important in this regard. They must be aligned with your target customer. For example, many solutions sold to consumers use self-service customer acquisition methods, whereas expensive solutions sold to the government require public procurement processes. Investors that understand the type of customer you are targeting will best be able to evaluate your plans for implementing processes and tools related to customer acquisition and support. Product category. Each different product category is accompanied by a unique product development process and pricing strategy that the angel will understand well. Examples include consumer electronics, mobile apps, data center hardware, CPG, medical devices, enterprise SaaS software, and professional services. Business model. Similar to target customers, business models are driven by unique customer acquisition methods and monetization strategies. Examples of business models include two-sided marketplaces, technology licensing, direct sales, self-service, and retail distribution. If you're building a technology licensing business, for example, investors that have done the same will understand the nuances of licensing and pricing models, exclusivity requests, and joint development processes. If instead you will sell your product through retail distribution, investors that have done the same will understand the importance of just-in-time inventory, end-cap displays, and consumer incentive strategies. Technology. Technology is different from product category. Examples of technology include artificial intelligence or AI, virtual reality or VR, and blockchain. If your solution heavily leverages technologies like these, investors who also understand them will appreciate the unique value they can bring to your customers and what your roadmap of product enhancements might entail. They will also know the big industry players who could later serve as value-add partners. Imagine if you found an angel investor that matched more than half of the previous criteria. Your odds of getting them to invest are infinitely higher than an investor who doesn't match any of the criteria. The odds of a pre-seed investor getting serious about making an investment are directly proportional to the number of check marks you can place next to the criteria listed previously. You are basically trying to thread a needle with a piece of rope. It's easier if you tease it apart. That's one of the reasons why pre-seed rounds are so difficult. There are a few situations that even intersected pre-seed investors will regard as riskier than normal. If any of these situations apply to you, you're going to need even more instances of intersection. If you just got started and are barely past the blank sheet of paper and don't have any real semblance of a business plan, team, customer interview feedback, or product requirements, investors will assess a much higher risk because all you really have is hope and the founder's personal track records of success. If your solution will serve a niche market, your market size will be smaller than the investor desires, and they'll worry about future market expansion opportunities. On the other hand, if the product you are building solves a problem the world doesn't really recognize exists, the investor will worry about the extra time, energy, and capital you'll need to put into grassroots evangelism to help generate the needed awareness. If you expect a long time before launching your product, investors will be concerned with the extra amount of money you'll need to raise over multiple rounds of funding to reach that point. Failure during any one of those funding rounds kills the company. Examples of such companies are those building complex hardware products or healthcare solutions that require FDA approval. Products like this can take years before they are ready to launch. These issues are not complete disqualifiers, but rather narrow the field of possible pre-seed investors even further. This is because the more issues you need to overcome, the greater the level of hyper-intersection is required. As you can probably imagine, finding hyper-intersected angels is not easy. It's unbelievably difficult, because the more criteria you need to match, the fewer candidates there are, and angel investors don't walk around with a sign around their neck informing you about the ways they might intersect with you. You're going to need to be driven, creative, scrappy, and unstoppable if you're going to have a chance of applying the principles suggested here. The good news is, those are the same attributes you need to build a successful business anyway. Summarizing startup success. Like with the strategy phase, time spent planning out the actual fundraising campaign will pay dividends by improving your odds of success at raising the desired amount from the right investors and in an efficient manner. Successful campaigns have a certain rhythm, which must be planned ahead of time. The time allocation and level of effort exerted during the start, middle, and end phases are analogous to a sports race. I am a long-time competitive swimmer, and when I compete in a middle or long-distance race, I carefully plan out my desired pace during the start, middle, and end of the race. It is my effort and exertion during the race that dictates the pace. Executed perfectly, I touch the wall with both a best time and a gold medal. Don't randomly start pitching investors before you're prepared, and don't pitch investors until you've planned out your campaign. If you do so, you risk losing credibility and wasting time. Credibility with prospective investors is absolutely required, and time is your most valuable resource. A lack of planning is a double whammy. I would rather see you tell a prospective investor you haven't yet launched your round of funding but would love to get to know them better, rather than have you try to formally pitch them unprepared just because they express some interest. Your mission isn't just to find any investor that has a heartbeat and breathes, but rather, the right investors that have reasonable or better odds of investing. Time wasted on low-odds investors is a killer. The described phases of a successful campaign are intended to help identify the best investors in the most efficient manner. This is especially difficult during the pre-seed stage, when you don't have any real validation of viability. A fundraising campaign almost always involves a lot more time and effort than anticipated. Mentally prepare yourself for a grind through lots of meetings and lots of rejection. But know that each positive meeting you have results in a bit of a battery recharge, and that, combined with the fire you already have in your belly, will propel you through the fundraising grind. Aha moments. 1. Only one person should serve as the chief fundraiser. If the company has someone with a CEO title, it's them. 2. Not all startup CEOs have the required core strengths needed to successfully fundraise. Time for soul searching. 3. Successful fundraising campaigns have a start, middle, and end phase. A. The start is focused on determining interest and consumes about 20% of the chief fundraiser's time. B. The middle consumes 30 to 40% of time and is focused on rating prospective investors and gaining feedback on both the amount to be raised and the key terms. C. The end requires dialing up to 80% in order to close out actual investments. 4. Fundraising campaigns operate like a marketing or sales funnel with a mix of investor quantity and quality. 5. Your most valuable resource is time. With enough time, you can adjust and adapt until you generally identify a viable, scalable, and sustainable business model. 6. In order to find investors, you have to go where they hang out. 7. Prepare to network, network, network until you're sick of it, then network a little more. 8. If you can't bootstrap all the way through the pre-seed phase, seek hyper-intersected angel investors. Their odds of investing are directly proportional to the amount of affinity or intersection they have with various elements of your business plan.